Some people think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think... Oh, bondage! Up yours!
Hello, world. This is Chris Abalo's podcast experiment, and I am Chris Abalo. Welcome to the show. Thank you for subscribing on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for following the show at Cape Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And thank you for listening to this episode, part two of my conversation with Melissa Vox. And I assume a lot of you are coming back because that first part got a great response. Really, I had a bunch of people personally reaching out to me to ask me more details and about what do you get into in the second half and all that other stuff. There were a lot of questions I got after the first episode, but people were very, very inspired by Melissa's experiences, which part one was more autobiographical, and part two, which you're about to hear, is more opinion-based. Her and I are exchanging a lot of opinions, which, frankly, we share a lot. So it was a fun conversation for me, because who doesn't like talking to people who agree with you? We all like that. And given that where this part of the conversation starts is we're probably about 3 hours deep into our conversation, this is like the late night portion of the show. Not to say you need to be listening to it at night, although if you do, make sure to pour yourself a drink and listen, because that definitely would suit the feel of our conversation. And it's something that in the midst of, we thought, wow, we probably should be doing this. Maybe we should be sipping on drinks and having a more, because things were so relaxed and we were just enjoying the conversation, which is why it was long enough for a two-parter. So maybe we'll do that next time, although hopefully it's in person next time and not on Zoom. Really quickly, before we get into part two, I want to thank everybody who tuned in to the live stream on Friday night. If you missed it, that will be next week's episode. So that will be Cape 164, the cleverly titled Chris Alive 2, because it was the second live stream we've done from a Shared Universe podcast studio. Huge thanks to the great Ming Chen and engineer Chris, a.k.a. Christian Cordes, for joining Andrew and I. It was a lot of fun, and we didn't expect it was going to be streaming on Facebook as well. And because it was, we got some fan interaction, seeing your live comments. And the reason I was plugging the YouTube live stream as opposed to Facebook is because I know a bunch of people who've been put in Facebook jail recently for comments that were pretty benign, and it seems to be fairly random. And my thought was, the guys at A Shared Universe are running a legitimate business. I don't want something one of us says or a gesture we make or anything like that to jeopardize their business by putting them in Facebook jail and taking the page down or something, because they do have a lot of shows that come through that want to live stream on Facebook. Understandably so. But thankfully, they don't care about anything like that. And apparently, it's also not how it works for businesses. So I was told. So I guess in the future, we'll be doing the live streams on Facebook and YouTube. And there definitely will be some more. That's going to be a regular thing, probably every other month, something like that. So if you missed it, that will be available in the podcast feed next Monday. And the full episode, the full video will be available on the YouTube channel as well. So if you want to subscribe to the Half-Assed Media channel, you can obviously look up Half-Assed Media, or you can use the link in the link tree in my bio or the Chris Abalo's podcast experiment social media bios, which again, Cape Pod. I get why everybody has a link tree, because it just lets you put endless links to all your stuff in there. So you can get to the YouTube channel as well as links to Apple and Google Podcasts and all that other stuff if you want to subscribe. And you should. We appreciate the liking, the sharing, the following, all of it. And once again, if you're new to the party and you came to the show because I'm talking to Melissa Vox, we hope you have fun. We hope you stay a while. All are welcome. So like I said, Melissa and I get more opinion-oriented. In this episode, we talk about bands and music fans and people who take the fashion of music and what they do with that, how people only appreciate certain things once they're gone, a bunch of stuff. I'm not going to lay it all out here at the top, but it is really good. And of course, it all wraps up with quarantine, this or that, which definitely went in a few interesting directions. And you'll know what I mean when you get to it. This one was a lot of fun, and it's probably one of my favorite. Okay, it's right now, it's definitely my favorite quarantine this or that, because it took a couple of interesting turns, and I personally liked the questions that I chose, and I think her reactions to them were pretty perfect. So this is the one to beat, future guests. If I spring quarantine this or that on you, the bar has been set. And since this is the second half of the show, I'm not going to be coming back on at the end to close it up because I just closed it up when we recorded it. So you're only getting this little preamble up front, and the rest of it will be the show as it was recorded. So two quick things before we get into it. The first one is, if you do support the show on Patreon, and thank you for those of you who do, which you can find the page at patreon.com/capepod, one of the bonuses you get at the $5 tier, and support starts at as low as $2, but the perks begin at $5 per month. One of the bonuses has been pre-show and post-show audio, because there's usually some banter beforehand, especially with the shows going on via Zoom. There's usually just some chatter and everybody joining in the meeting and things like that. And as I said last week, we talked for about an hour before we got into the show itself. So that bonus audio, the pre-show, is going to be made available to you this week. And if you enjoyed these two parts, I think you're really going to enjoy this because it is really, really funny. And it's our first, literally the first interaction we had, because it's myself and Chris Madd, a.k.a. Engineer Chris Jr., meeting Militia for the first time and chatting about Sheetz versus Wawa, dealing with people in Los Angeles, local haunts. And I don't mean like a bar or a club or things like that. I'm talking about actual haunted locations because she's gone to visit a whole bunch of them. Engineer Chris Jr. just visited one for his anniversary. So if you want to hear about that, it is really, really funny. And apologies to those of you who were looking for the video of this show. The short version is there's not going to be a video version of the show because I'm having trouble with the files because they're too large. The Zoom is several gigs of video, and I just don't have the equipment or technology, I guess, to properly process files that large. So I'm sorry. I can pull the little video clips that are going to go up on the YouTube channel, but as far as the full episode, a full 3-hour episode or 2-hour-and-a-half episodes, I'm sorry. This one's not going to be available just because of size. That is a rarity. Who knew it was going to go this way? But just an FYI that there is going to be a video version of the show. But the pre-show, I think, more than makes up for it because it's about an hour of really, really interesting conversation before these two interesting conversations that you will have heard shortly. And the last thing before we get started, as I said last week and as we say during our chat, Bandcamp is an excellent place to support independent artists and musicians. And since last year, the first Friday of every month, they've been doing Bandcamp Friday, which is when they waive their fees and they give the profits from the day's sales to the artists, which is huge because obviously there are a lot of musicians who are missing out on income because there are no live shows being played. They're starting to come back now. And as of now, May 7th is the last Bandcamp Friday on the calendar. Here's hoping they add some more or maybe even just make it a regular thing in general, because that would be great. But if you have any inclination to check out someone's music and buy it, every day is a good day to buy from Bandcamp because they still give the lion's share of profits to the artist. But on May 7th, it will make the biggest impact. I'm definitely going to be sharing something on my social media again as far as bands and albums and things like that, which I recommend. And there's probably bands in there you don't even know. Bands like Bikini Kill and Cannibal Corpse and other Militia Vox approved bands who sell their music and merchandise on there. Oh, yeah, along with Militia Vox and Judas Priestess, lest we forget. And we touch on Judas Priestess as well in this second half. So it's always a good idea to support artists by buying their stuff through Bandcamp. And if you're listening to this episode before May 7th, if you want to wait till that day, like I said, it'll make the biggest impact. But if you want to buy it right away, still a really, really good idea. So support independent artists, support musicians. If you're comfortable going to shows once concerts come back, go out and see a show, buy some merch, buy the band some drinks. It'll definitely be appreciated. So there's my little plug for that, because I love that Bandcamp has been waiving their fees for, even if it's just the one day a month, it's made a huge impact on a lot of people. And that's why I've been more vocal about it the last few months, because it's a musician's job to make music and perform music. It's Militia's job to do that, and she should be paid for it. And the fact that a company is going to step up and give the artist a larger share, given the circumstance of what we're going through, awesome. Anyway, let's get started. Here is part two of two, even though I'm sure there'll be many more in the future, of my conversation with Melissa Vox. Let's talk about The Villainous, your debut album, which was released in 2018, which has now evolved into a visual album. And that's something I'm really fascinated by, in that you pursued it as an independent artist, because it's not as big of a deal or really much of a surprise when someone like Beyonce does it, because she has incredible resources and she could pour a lot of money into it and sell it to HBO at a huge profit. But for an independent artist like yourself to put together music videos for each song on the album, which you directed as well, so you're able to explore that part of your creativity, I'd like to know, is it something that you had in mind as you were putting the album together, or is it something where when it was done, sitting back and listening to it, you realized, oh, wait, I can do something different with this?
Everything came about like very organically, but I got the idea for the visual album just because, well, it ended up being that I wanted to make videos for each song because I wanted people to watch the music, you know, instead of just listen to it, because like, it's like, who's just going to listen to an album now? It's like, I feel like, you know, because attention spans are so limited that you need a visual, like, or else people kind of check out, you know? So I've always enjoyed like stuff like Pink Floyd's The Wall. And I loved how, like, I always thought it was kind of fascinating, not the work itself and like the visual itself per se, but the fact that I knew so many people that were getting together with their friends to watch The Wall and get fucked up.
Yeah. To have this experience and, set to this album.
Yeah. And I was like, I want that, where people, you know, in a dark and stormy night in October might get to go with their with their friends and watch The Villainous. That's kind of like the wet dream there. But I always loved, like the Beatles did like Hard Day's Night and Help and stuff like that. I always thought that was so cool that they had like this film, or like Yellow Submarine. There's this film of the record, you know, it's like, it's just a very unique thing. I'm surprised more artists don't do it.
It's kind of surprising these days that more aren't doing it, with the availability of technology, the way everything's been democratized. Yeah. And you just put it up on YouTube. You would think a lot more artists would be interested in doing it, because there's so much more freedom when it comes to doing that. And people, I think, are accepting of it, too. That's the other thing. People are up for a different kind of experience, because there are lots of people like us who don't just have music as the background while we're doing other things, who actually want to give it undivided attention. And especially for your album, which sonically is very much a roller coaster. Having watched the album, having watched the visual album a few times, it really does. I mean, as great as it is to listen to, and highly recommend listening to The Villainous, on a night drive or at night period. Just put your headphones on if you're not going to drive, but as part of your goings on, you know, completely focus on it. Or you can have it to kind of guide you through whatever's going on, because there's that much. It's that, I mean, this is a compliment. It's that dense of an album where there are so many different levels in it, where it really is. Mm-hmm. The album itself is a journey, which in and of itself, I think, is pretty unique, especially for this genre. It'd be different if you were doing some more straight, I mean, hardly straightforward, but something in the more progressive space, but doing something that's part goth, part industrial, part metal, that touches on all these different genres, and sometimes in the same song, really does give it, it's certainly unique to me. I really haven't seen anything like it, and it's one of the things that really, really bowled me over about it, is that you put this thing together, which, as an album, stands on its own, and also as a visual album, just as a film, just plays and has this arc to it, where I wish I could find the words to kind of sum up exactly how it is without sounding too ass kissy, but it just plays as a visual piece and just as an album, where you can actually have one without the other. You can just listen to it, and then you can actually watch the whole thing through, and it makes sense. And it's a journey. And even the idea that you were able to shepherd this whole project with directing the videos and bringing this visual style into it, aside from everything you did musically, it really is stunning. It really is an amazing piece of work.
Thank you. I love The Villainous so much with all my heart. I feel like, because I had no fear about like the territories that I wanted to go into. I mean, there was honestly, there was times where I was like, I want to even go deeper if I can, you know, it's like without losing people. You know, I want people to be able to, I want to be able to communicate the messages. And, you know, I didn't want to think about like, oh, well, you know, these two are two different genres, so these songs don't belong next to each other. Never crossed my mind.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. So I was just like, but this, they're all in story order. There's this like definite concept there as to like the process that's happening there. But it is my wet dream. I want people to like, you know, I do want people to discover it and like get, you know, hang out with their friends and like screen it, you know, in a dark room and like get high to it, like, or fuck to it or whatever they feel, you know, because you know, just it has that, like, I want it to be communal, like a ritual in a way that people can enjoy, that they know that, you know, anytime that they watch or listen to it, that they're gonna have an experience, you know, they're gonna have maybe hear new things and sounds that they didn't hear before, or like, you know, there's so many levels to the record and so many less levels sonically and sounds that like painstakingly sound designed to like to be a thing that you would feel in your innards. Like, it was definitely stuff where I was like, you know, where I was layering sounds in a way that I was like, okay, like I want something so low the whales can hear it at this point, you know, just so it triggers a different response out of you, the listener. And like, also like, a lot of people don't know about this, but the whole album is recorded in 432, which is like, if you're familiar with like the tuning of instruments, 432 is considered the universal tuning,
right?
The tuning of the universe.
Even though 440 is traditional.
Played at 440.
Right.
Right. So like this is in 432. So then there's things that you're listening to that you're not even aware that you're listening to because of the frequencies that you're listening to them on. It's pretty music nerdy and I'm pretty proud of it. Pantera also recorded in 432. A lot of people don't know that, but there's a couple bands that have discovered it and they use it. But I think, you know, now the fact, and like, because of my budgetary restrictions at the time, I mean, because I self-funded all of this whole thing. And when Beyonce came out with her visual album, I was like, no, because I was just like, I don't want to be compared. Like, please don't compare me to her, please. Like, or don't say that I got the inspiration from her.
Yeah,
whatever. She brought back the visual album. Like, I just like, ugh. Like, it was just like, it's like, it had been taking me a long time to do this. The Villainous was already in the works for years, like several years before that thing came out. But anyway, and it's still like a work in progress. There's still three more videos that need to be shot and one that needs to be edited.
And you've done this. It evolved as an immersive experience as well.
So the first immersive experience of it was projector based. It was a multiple projector immersive experience that was like a 360 experience in a movie theater for the film Fear NYC Film Festival. And that was fun, but it was like gut-wrenching for me because I was responsible for all the projectors. So it was like, you know, so they were on different timers and things like that. And I have remotes and I'm going click, 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 click.
Oh, so you manually had to actually handle the show itself?
Yes, yes.
See, the dedication. So, like, will you people buy the album now?
I know. It's sick. It's so disturbing. So that was all cool. And then, you know, I started working with Fivers up in Canada, who's like the AR/VR, you know, go-to in Canada. And, you know, I had submitted to them about working with them and like doing this, you know, IRL in real life. And because of the pandemic, obviously we couldn't do that. But then they came back at me and were like, let's do this virtually. And I'm like, how? Like, how are we going to do this so it's exciting, you know, virtually? And they were just like, yeah, we can. Like, I basically had to sketch to them what it looks like. And then I had actually shot a demo video of what it looked like with the multiple panel screens so they could see how it would look in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And they took that and they put it into a AR, VR, XR system. They basically mapped it, what I had created, and just put it into a thing where you could, like, they did the data. They did the
they were able to render this.
Yeah.
This,
yes, they
VR experience.
And so, like, you could, like, put on your Oculus headset and walk into a virtual movie theater that had all the multiple screens of the Villainous, and you could, like, sit there and watch it. You could move around the theater. You could go upstairs. You could talk to other people in the room. You could chat. You could,
that's,
I mean, it's like
insane and amazing.
It was amazing. And I was just like, when I saw it, like, I wanted to cry because it was like my wildest dreams, like, were just there. It was just, and I didn't have to push anyone for it. Like, I didn't have to ask. I didn't have to say, like, hey, look at me. Like, hey, recognize me and use me for this thing. Like, they were like, no, we believe in the work and we want to format this.
So they were made aware of this, that this was already, this existed. And then they reached out to you to say, can we develop this?
Well, I had reached out to them to see if they could feature the immersive exhibition in their film festival.
Ah, okay. And but then because then, of the pandemic, they had to,
because of the pandemic, they were like, oh, well, maybe we can use, we can do what you're doing and just make it so, like, anyone can watch from any device. And, like, they just created a virtual theater. And it was just like, anyone can watch this from anywhere in the world. So it was really, it was like beyond my wildest dreams. But then it was like, no, this is what I want. I wanted it to be a thing where as many people as possible could watch it, enjoy it. However, you know, projectors are not, like, this is still the same kind of, it's still the same thing with modern tech, extremely modern technology, you know? So we're actually working on some future events that are going to be really, really fucking cool.
That was going to be my next question. If this is something that's still going to happen now that we're kind of getting back out into the world, now that we're actually able to have some experiences in limited capacities.
Well, now I'm spoiled. Now I'm spoiled.
The VR experience has completely redefined what this could be for you.
Yeah. Because now we're talking, like, we're like, the next events that we're going to be doing, we're going to do more AR, VR, XR of the Villainous. And we're even going to do, when we do in real life events, they're going to map it for large spaces. So, like, how that Van Gogh exhibit is going around. Like,
I saw that. There's the immersive Van Gogh in New York, which looks awesome.
So the Villainous is going to be mapped in that way.
That's incredible.
Like, floor to ceiling. So you're getting an exclusive on that because I haven't announced that at all yet.
That's great. And it's going to be in New York?
Is
it
going to
be in various
York
spaces? It's still developing.
It'll be in various spaces. On. Yeah, but it's already like a green light. Like, we're doing this. So,
oh, congratulations. That is really, really amazing.
Yeah. Because I'm completely spoiled now. So it's like, projector what? I'm like,
yeah. I'm not sitting around clicking buttons anymore to trigger effects. No.
Right?
You people can put on your headsets like it's a...
Right. So like
they do it at the immersive rides at theme parks. And you can do that.
I'm so ready for it. And like, we're excited to work together, you know, me and the Fivers team, to create these new experiences and, you know, and just have it be a thing. Because it's never been done before. No artist has ever... AR, VR, and XR, their fucking album. You know, it's like, this is groundbreaking shit, you know, but this is everything that I've wanted for the Villainous to be. Like, I want it to be communal in this way.
And I think that's the type of experience people are going to be hungry for when they're going back out into the world after just being in their own space now to get into pure escapism, which is what it's going to be, being immersive.
Yeah.
And visually, musically, just being in this space of having this escape is going to be, I think people are really going to be up for stuff like that. Aside from just concerts in general, which, you know, fingers crossed those come back sooner.
Right. I just go like, this is the most intense COVID-friendly sanitary concert you can have. It is this, because it's just like, you know, this is a kind of thing that can play, you know, it's on any device, but it's also like fit for museums or galleries and things like that, which I've always wanted to do this anyway. Like my initial vision was to have the villainess be a thing where people could, I could park it in a gallery for like a month.
Yeah.
And people could come and see it like they go see Basquiat exhibitions.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
the villainess exhibit.
Right. So like that was the initial desire for it, you know? So now that this is happening in this way, it's like everything I want times a thousand, you know? So it's been really satisfying. So, but this October, there's definitely going to be more AR, VR, XR coming out of the Militia Vox pool of thoughts.
Awesome. I really think people are going to be up for it. My hope is that these galleries and these exhibits are still going to be around, because honestly, one of the a point of contention you and I share in this pandemic has been the basically the disregard for the arts in general, which is ironic because during the pandemic in this last year, the arts are exactly what people have turned to for comfort. They've turned to movies and TV shows and music and podcasts and books and audiobooks. Meanwhile, those are the things that we're not really taking care of. I've gotten on a soapbox about this a lot in recent weeks.
Yeah.
In that we're a weird culture because we're happy to subsidize oil. We will bail out banks. We'll bail out the auto industry. We bail out the airlines, even when it's their fault. But when it comes to the arts, it's, well, we'll see. I mean, saving our stages is a good idea, but, you know, we got to put money into these other industries.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, you guys are used to scratching and surviving, right? Like, you'll be fine.
Yeah. You know, and meanwhile, I mean, I'm sure you know in New York, there must be a bunch of places. I mean, with you being a fixture of the New York music scene, you must have known places that have not survived COVID because they can't just literally pay the rent to stay there while they're closed or even run in limited capacity. Right. So the idea of helping the arts and bailing out these places or giving them some means to stay afloat, it's aggravating. I mean, you and I were both commenting on Instagram how football games came back and they had reduced capacity and yet no limited capacity concerts, even in larger spaces.
Right.
You know, clubs, it's different. I had this conversation on the show 2 weeks ago, actually, with my cousin, who's a touring guitarist, and the idea of clubs opening up with 25% capacity, well, some of these clubs can't sustain themselves on the money brought in from 25% capacity, unless you want to set a 5-drink minimum or something, then they might not even be breaking even.
Right.
I mean, the hope is that these venues and these places where they're going to be showing the immersive villainous, that they're going to be around, because this is a real ongoing concern when it comes to, are we actually going to take care of people? But it's frustrating on so many levels that the arts are not being supported in all of this.
Well, that every other industry is. Arts aren't usually supported when it's not a pandemic. I mean, like,
well, yeah, everybody says they should, but nobody walks the walk.
Like, I mean, like, National Endowment for the Arts had their funding pulled. Remember?
Yeah. And there's always talk about defunding PBS and all these other...
Like, there's already this weird disrespect, which is solely... Well, I'm not going to say solely because I don't know about all countries, but America does this thing where it's like there's a love-hate relationship with its artists. You know? I mean, how many artists can you think of that, like, during their lifetime, they had a difficult go, and then in death they're celebrated.
Oh, totally.
And then all of a sudden cities are being like, oh, this person, you know, ate here once. This person, you know, it's like, you know, it's just like, it's just such a fuckery, you know, but that's our culture. It's just weird. I wish people would celebrate certain artists more in their lifetime. Like, I'm a big Edgar Allan Poe aficionado. Addict, freak, and like
all
the
above,
he was completely disrespected in his life and drank himself to death because nobody gave a fuck. And then now look at him; they're erecting statues into any place he even set foot on.
Exactly,
like, it's like, you know. But how many years after the fact? 200.
Right. I mean, one of my heroes, Joey Ramone, coming up on Thursday, 20 years since he passed away. You never see more Ramones t-shirts than anything. I mean, also, to be honest, the most obvious example of that is Prince. Because I feel like in the last 5 years since Prince died, I've heard more Prince music, more talk about Prince in the conversation of what an artist he is than I did in the previous 25 years. Because that dude was cranking out albums like crazy and everyone just kind of shrugged it off. No big deal.
Right.
But now everybody can't stop sucking off Prince, so to speak. Now everybody just loves Prince and all his contributions to music. Oh, he was such a genius, and blah, 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 but only in death. So now, now we're appreciating these people, and it sucks. We have a really weird culture that way.
It's so weird. I just, like, something's funny when I know that something's really arrived in the mainstream. Usually, you'll see it on a T-shirt at like the beach, you know, like beach communities that have like those T-shirt shops. Like, if you just see something that really breaks through, it's on one of those cheap T-shirts.
Yeah, it's on a bootleg T-shirt printed on the boardwalk.
Yeah, so,
thrown up at the Jersey Shore. Like, seen a lot of those.
Yeah, so, like, I remember, like, going to the beach last summer and being like, wow, like, it's the first time I'm seeing a Prince shirt on the jersey, on the boardwalk beach, or, like, this dead rapper, like, Tupac's all over here, or, like, oh, there's Biggie shirts everywhere, oh, Kurt Cobain shirts, you know, it's just, like, when they're alive, they're celebrated, but there's a certain disdain for them or something, or a certain desire for them to fall apart.
I think everybody takes advantage. I mean, you just take it, or excuse me, takes them for granted because I think everybody thinks, Prince is always going to be around. He's always going to tour. He's going to be him. And then there's the point when it's gone that everybody suddenly has an appreciation. I mean, there was a funny story here. There's a venue in, it's either East Brunswick or New Brunswick, a little bit south of me. There's a venue called the Court Tavern, which had been around forever. And they went out of business a couple of years ago. And all of a sudden, people are going crazy. Oh, my gosh, the Court Tavern closed. I can't believe the Court Tavern's out of business. We need to bring it back. And then they had this big event to fundraise, and they brought it back. And, you know, who knows if it's going to be in business by the time concerts come back. But it's kind of the idea of we're going to go. I mean, Stone Pony, same thing. There was a little window where the Stone Pony didn't exist. It was just another Jersey Shore club called Vinyl. And then everybody got up in arms about, oh my God, it's a Stone Pony. Meanwhile, these people probably haven't been to a show since 77, but they're like, oh, the Stone Pony needs to be around.
Right.
We can't have Stone Pony get taken over and become something else. And it's back, but are people going to shows? I don't know. They might. The hope is that at the end of all of this, people are going to want to go out and have those experiences because since they've experienced a whole lot of nothing apart from couch time, they are going to hopefully go to concerts. They're going to hopefully go out and support anything on a small level, but hopefully the arts, which is another way you and I connected, was because for the last year, the website Bandcamp, where artists of all stripes can sell their music. The first Friday of every month, Bandcamp has waived their fees, given profits to the arts, and had Bandcamp Friday. And the next one is May 7th. So if you want to go to militiavox.bandcamp.com, pick up some stuff. There's a company that's actually saying, we are going to waive our costs, because I believe the standard for if you bought something on, say, Apple Music or any other service or Amazon, I think it's a standard like a third goes toward the store you buy it from, essentially. So the idea that even on the average day, I think it's around 80% of the profit goes to the artist anyway when purchased through Bandcamp. But here's a group that's actually doing something about it, and it's brought people in and people are interested in this as a means. And they're also kind of filling the void that was left when CD Baby closed up as well, is that a lot of artists kind of moved over to a similar setup. I really, really hope people do show up for this stuff once we get back to some semblance of normal, because the idea that everyone's been so dependent on the arts to get them through this pandemic, but when it comes to actually making sure they're there when we're through this, that's a different story. I just think we really do take it for granted in a lot of ways in this culture. It's very weird. I don't really understand it, but it frustrates me.
Well, because, I mean, obviously the arts are a highly competitive space and it's very oversaturated and there's not as many thresholds, right?
Yeah, the barrier to entry is non-existent now.
Yeah.
Everything's democratized.
So, but the thing about Bandcamp is that because they're so great with like the payout system, and they waive their fees, and like no other platform does this. I mean, nobody has taken no one else does it.
Yeah, shockingly, somebody hasn't copied it.
But But these are all huge tech companies that could do it if they wanted to. Keep that in mind, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of artists now that are saying like, yeah, I don't want my stuff on Spotify. Or I don't want my stuff on Amazon Music. Or I don't want my stuff, you know, there's other people that are going, I know this could hurt in a way, but if people like me, go to Bandcamp and buy my stuff.
Totally.
You know, and they're selling like exclusively there. So like respect to them. Like I appreciate that very much. I've considered doing that too, just because I fucking hate Spotify. It's just like a fucking, it's just, I mean, I love it as a consumer, but it's awful for musicians. It's basically, it is Napster. Let's be real. It's a subscription Napster. Yeah.
It's a legalized version of Napster that everybody's just kind of,
but the only reason why it's legal is because they haven't been able to write the laws to make it illegal. That's the only reason why it's legal. That's it. It's because the technology moved so fast that those laws just didn't exist. There's very little law in place when it comes to streaming. Like it's just not on the books. So the Music Modernization Act, which I helped work on actually, was passed, but all the tech companies that have music are fighting it.
They
are fighting it, right? Because they don't want the buffet to, you know, go down to a la carte, you know?
Of course.
So they're upset about it, but I don't know. It's going to take a lot of solidarity, but you know, musicians we don't have that kind of stuff. Like we don't have, I mean, there are unions, but we don't have a union in place to fight this shit. Like other businesses have unions and things like that, where they're able to fight things like on a united front, you know? So because it's so separated and everyone's kind of splintered, then you haven't been able to accomplish the big things that we need to survive, you know? Like, for example, like we were talking about like how things die and then people are like, oh, that's such a shame. That was great. Like CBGB to me is like the ultimate example of that where,
oh, absolutely.
Where when it was around, it was like, oh, that place, oh, such a shithole and da 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 da. And now everyone loves to tell the stories of CBGB.
Exactly. There's a whole generation that thinks CBGB is a clothing brand. Yeah. That's
Oh, I peed in the bathroom.
Yeah, that's a joke.
You know, but like, there's people that would see the logo and I don't even know what they think it is.
Yeah.
I have no idea what they think it is.
They probably think it's a competitor for Abercrombie or something. They're like, oh, I see those t-shirts around. I know that name.
It's just a brand now.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. So like, it's artwork. It's brand. You know, it's a style. It's a font. It's just kind of weird. Yeah,
it's a label. It's like the Jack Daniel's label that everybody rips off and puts their logo on. It's just another logo. Like,
it's weird to see the things that like are lasting when these legendary places existed. It's just like, it's weird to see the things that survive, you know? So it's kind of like with the Ramones situation, it's like, there's so many people wearing that fucking t-shirt. And they don't even know what the Ramones sound like or who they were.
They know I Want to Be Sedated and that's it.
Maybe
if
even that,
if even that, you're absolutely right.
I mean, now I found that
design.
It seems like I feel like Slayer and Def Leppard are now the bands that are like their logo, which is
everywhere. And Iron Maiden, everybody's ripping off those fonts too.
Yeah,
other artists are using those fonts to do whatever it is.
It's crazy that like I see so many people that love the heavy metal aesthetic, but they don't want to be known or associated as heavy metal.
Right. They're okay with the fashionable element of it in the way it makes them look cool. People like that association, but they're not actually into it. And yeah, maybe they have a few songs on their, you know, liked songs in Spotify, whatever the biggest hit was.
So weird.
Like, oh, I love Guns N' Roses. No, you love Sweet Child of Mine. And that's it. So,
yeah,
I mean,
you can
wear the crop top t-shirt and act like you're cool, but you're listening to one song.
I mean, like, I honestly thought about like how I would feel about that if like any of my artwork reached that level. Like, would I be upset if they weren't actual fans, but they were just walking around with like, they liked the logo that I have or something like that. And like what that would feel like. Cause like, you know, I feel like to rock people, the t-shirt of the band that you're wearing is part of your identity. You're like raising a flag saying, this is who I am. Do you identify with this too? Right. But now it's like, look, this is my image and look at this cool
exactly.
branding. Once, like, it's so weird.
Once shirts like that know? Started showing up in Forever 21 and Urban Outfitters yeah. and places like that, and it just became about fashion, now it's just,
yeah,
it's turned into something different. And it's,
yeah,
I mean, I'm not such a purist that I look at it as like, how dare anybody wear, like, they didn't see Def Leppard on the Adrenaline tour. How dare they wear the shirt? Like, it's not even about that. That's fine. I mean, even the idea that you can get a shirt, you know, Rolling Stones 1975 tour. You weren't alive in 1975, so obviously you weren't at the show. Right. But I guess you right. think it's cool to wear a shirt that says Rolling Stones right. U.S. Tour 1975.
Right. But like, which is funny because I just go like, because like, to the mainstream, rock is like considered dead, you know, like it's like a dead animal. But
right.
I go like, but you guys want to wear the aesthetic of it so bad. That's the weird thing.
Yeah. People love that. And they love the way it makes them look, especially in social media age
yeah.
where everybody's, where we're all self-absorbed. Everybody wants to be seen right. as cool and interesting.
Right.
So they're happy to wear
yeah.
a Slayer shirt,
it's
even
so
though they
weird.
Have zero connection to Slayer, but they know
right,
it's
right.
going to get them some attention.
Right. It's just so, it's so, 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 so weird. But to me as a rock person, I would never wear the t-shirt of a band that I didn't listen to.
Oh, same. I do my clothes shopping at shows, more or less.
Yeah, me too. There
are the occasional times where, like, I can't get, like, I am wearing a Lemmy shirt right now, and obviously there aren't going to be any Motorhead shows to go buy
yeah.
a shirt at, but I listen to it. I listen to Motorhead regularly. I got the Ace of Spades edition that just came out, 40th edition.
Yay.
I love it. Still down for physical media in every form.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to fight me on.
Lemmy,
but
man.
There's still that element for me of, well, I'm wearing it because I like it. I
right,
went and
right.
saw the show. I like having the tour shirt, especially because there's that memory attached to it. I did a whole thing on my Instagram recently where I went through, as I've said multiple times over the last year, I've been going down to my parents a lot and helping out. And I was going through some plastic storage bins in their garage. And there were two of them, two big ass storage containers with t-shirts. And a lot of them are tour t-shirts and things like that, that just kind of fell out of the rotation at some point because I have so many.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny opening up the box and pulling out these shirts and remembering exactly where it was and where I got the shirt. Even if it wasn't a tour shirt, I remember I got the show. And even just seeing the tour dates, I'm able to hold up my AC/DC shirt from 2001 and say, like, that was the date I went and saw them at the Garden in May of 2001. And to have those memories, like, it does mean something to me. I mean, I'm not judging people. Okay, I am a little bit for wearing the shirt, not necessarily being into the band, but it just means something different to me to actually wear it and to actually fly the flag for a band. Like you said, that's the perfect way to put it, actually.
Yeah.
That I have skin in this
billboard
game.
For the band. Yeah.
Right.
So that's why I just don't know why someone would misrepresent their identity in that way. Like, how you dress and what you wear is already a form of identity, but then wearing a band's logo, like, you're advertising for them and you're saying, I identify with what this band is repping. Like, that's my rep too.
Totally.
Like, that's, so I just don't know why someone would choose to wear something that they didn't identify with. It's just, it's costuming. It's weird.
It is. It's cosplaying. I'm cosplaying as a person with taste.
But even cosplay people, they at least are dressing as a character that they identify with.
Yeah, they're actually they're burning some calories making a costume. They're not just buying a shirt at Forever 21.
Yeah, it's so weird to me. But, you know, that's why I think, you know, when it comes to, like, my artwork is, like, very specific. And, like, my artwork is always something that's, like, you know, I fucking obsess over the artwork. And like, all the artwork starts off as a sketch. You know, it's always a sketch. And then either I do it myself or I get, you know, someone, my old bass player Shane is better than me at graphics. So, like, sometimes I'll be like, look, I need a red moon and I need a raven and I need my logo and I need this picture of me. And he'll go, okay.
Make it happen.
Yeah, so, like, that's like, on the very few occasions, the rare occasion that I do ask for help, you know, it's like, it's stuff like that.
Help me make this dream into something. Put these pieces together and make a piece of artwork for me. Go.
Right. But I always have, like, a very clear idea of what I want. you know, I'm very much like, I don't know, I feel like as an artist, you just, you're first and foremost like a visionary. You have to have the vision for what you want. And, you know, there's times to like Jackson Pollock the shit and just kind of like let the paint fall where it may. But essentially there's, you know, there's a framework for anything I'm trying to do.
For sure.
You know, so like I've recently started taking scoring more seriously and like getting commissions to do more scoring and things like that. And I just finished a horror score that was pretty fucking awesome.
For a project?
I just feel like, yeah. So like, I feel like it's been fun because like, it's a different set of tools, obviously scoring.
Oh, for sure.
And like, it's a different wheelhouse because you're not writing songs to be up front. You're writing things to be supporting, like in the background. But also the work has to stand on its own. So yeah. It's like a really weird skill set to write for scoring.
It's a tough balance.
Media. Yeah. So, but it's so much fun to play with because I love horror sounds. And like, I just finished this score where I just like took the weirdest sounds I could find from like the house. Like I love to incorporate organic sounds with like different like sample textures or MIDI textures, mm-hmm. and things like that.
Like real world sounds and work them into your scoring.
And that's layer awesome. Them. Yeah. So like, you know, I would record on my iPhone, like my creaky door that's like in the closet back there. And then just like magnify the sound, like just like intense it, make it louder, warp it, you know, put it through like some distorting effects and things like that and make it just sound like.
And create something new out of it. It doesn't sound like a creaky door anymore.
Sound like, yeah, it sounds like Pennywise or something. You know, it just sounds like, it just sounds like fucking, you know, unsettling and uncomfortable and dark. And I took like, I always collect these weird little like horror things. Let's see if I can find this for you. I'm sure you've gone to Spirit Halloween in your life, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Like, so Spirit Halloween sells these, like, they sell these, like, weird little trinkets by the register, which I love. And they usually scream and stuff like that. So, like, I bought, like, you know, like this kind of shit where they, like, you know, it's like.
Oh, so and your eyes light up too? That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So I buy, like, weird little horror trinkets, and I bought, like, I can't even find it now. I don't. Oh, it's over there. But I buy these like, usually it's things that make these weird screaming noises. Mm. You know, you press a button and there's a scream.
Yeah, there's a shriek.
Press a button and there's like, yeah. So like, I have that all over the score. I like used all these Spirit Halloween screaming toys and like warped the sound and layered it. And now it sounds like a girl getting chopped up in the woods. You know, so it's like. So like I was making the sounds and just like as I'm like crafting this shit I'm just like laughing like ah. Like this is all so much fun just to create like these little weird auditory like weird visceral audio experiences and then just have my own story but then it's just gonna go underneath like this other story that I haven't even seen yet. So like this is like a whole new world, but I don't know. I'm down for doing more of it because it's just like it's just so much fun to play in that way, where it's like okay, like we're gonna create a horror sound that's like, you know, you want it to be something exciting, so there's got to be some kind of rhythm to it, and there's got to be some kind of like what's gonna be the rhythm, like okay, the rhythm is going to be. A creaky floor or like the rhythm is going to be wind or the rhythm is going to be, you know, so it's like, it's not far off from what I was already doing in my solo stuff, but
but there's a demand for like, it too, so that helps.
Yeah, there's a demand. So it's like just to make it like something where, you know, it's like in the horror genre the mission is to scare. So it's like, it's so much fun because like, I know that if I have a moment where I'm like, oh, that's unsettling or that feels uncomfortable. Or, oh, my stomach twisted when I heard that, then I know I'm doing the right
thing. You know, you're on to something.
Yeah. So, yeah. So there'll be more of that coming out for sure. But,
So I'd be remiss if we didn't talk at least a little bit about Judas Priestess. Which
oh yeah
obviously yeah, there's that band
oh, yeah
there's that project you work on too. First of all, it is a all-female Judas Priest tribute band. It's not a cover band. I feel like cover band.
It's not a cover band.
I feel like cover band is somewhat dismissive when people say cover band. And I'm not a big fan of it. The tribute band is because you were playing a strictly Judas Priest set. And also...
Well, yeah, because a cover band covers multiple bands.
Yeah, or a decade or whatever. Or just top 40 from the various, you know, from down the years. A tribute band is a tribute to a particular band.
One band.
Or artist.
Yes, that is the thing.
And I like that they're also, you maintain your individual identities. There was no, I mean, was there a conversation about you becoming Roberta Halford or Glenda Tipton or Kay Downing or something like that? There was, that was never a discussion.
We knew that we definitely did not want to do that.
Okay, cool.
That was the discussion. We were like, yeah, we're not doing that shit.
Because I like that all the members, you still have your identities. You're not just a character, so to speak. You are five artists together who play in this band.
It was important to us to maintain our own identity because we weren't imitating. Like, we weren't in characters, or we weren't trying to be like them. It was very important to us that we say, like, no, I'm Militia Vox, that's Gita Gash, you know, like, we're not representing the band in that way.
Right.
You're
paying tribute to the music.
We're going to tribute the music that is the band, the catalog, and maybe like give a nod to their style of dress or whatever. But we were never imitators, and we were never trying to do that thing that tribute does sometimes, which is why it gets a bad rep, is like the wig bands or the panty bands, as we call them. Yeah. You know, it's like we were never doing that shit. Like, we were already aware that us being all girls was going to be seen as a gimmick. Even though it's not a gimmick, it was a statement first and foremost. Like, we just wanted to be like, yeah, we're girls that can play this fucking, this crazy fucking intense, beloved heavy metal Criterion. Like, that was the whole point of it. It wasn't, you know, we're a bunch of girls. Like, now are you going to look? You know, like, it was never anything like that.
Right.
You know, it was never.
It was never going to be a gimmick.
Never something that was, like, yeah.
Come see us boring. Because we're all girls. It was not about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that when people first hear about it, they assume whatever they assume about it. And they think, oh, yeah, like, they're doing that thing. It's a device. But and then they see us and they're like, oh, shit, like, they're doing that thing.
Yeah.
And
so, and like, they're kicking ass. This is.
Yeah. So, like, it was like, you can't love heavy metal and not love Judas Priestess, because
totally
we're doing it for the right reasons. We're doing it out of sheer love and respect. So, like, I definitely feel that comes across. No one was doing it to, oh, like, let's pick a band, you know. It's like, no, we chose Judas Priest, like, for very good reasons.
Right. It wasn't contrived where it's, well, we're all women, let's pick an artist that
let's
we're gonna
pick something that
tie
we think
ourselves
is gonna,
to
like, book up. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bands, tribute bands, would be like, oh, well, let's do something everybody likes. Oh, I got into tribute because we want people to show up
that's a draw for a lot of people. I know people are going to show up because they know the songs.
Yeah. And I was just like, you know, like, to me, I'd never done tribute in my life. I mean, I've sung covers here and there, but like, I'd never been in a tribute band. And, you know, I was even concerned about like the connotation of it and how it was going to be perceived and this and that. And, you know, I very much was like, I don't know. Like, when I heard about it, I was like, I don't know if they can play this. And I thought all the same things that people think, I'm sure, when they see us, you know,
right,
written like in an ad or like your promo or anything like that.
All female Judas Priest band. No way.
Yeah, like, they probably suck.
Yeah. So you've been that cynical, reluctant fan.
First heard about it and when they were forming. And then I was just like, man, somebody said to me, oh, yeah, but what if you don't, like, go out for it and, like, some other girl gets it and you'll be wishing that it was you?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit. You're right. So I was like, all right, I'm going to meet these girls. And it was, like, a thing, like, as soon as I walked in the room, man, I knew they were my sisters. Like, I just knew.
You just feel it. The energy in the room.
Yeah, I was like, we're going to do this. Yeah. I was like, we're going to do this. Like, it was just, that was it. Like, I could just tell. And, it was funny because, like, you know, to get their attention and to show them I was serious, I sent them pictures of me with Rob Halford, like over the years.
Which must have been at least a little intimidating.
Oh, well, they were like, okay. You know, because I was going to shows and seeing fight. You know, I saw Halford solo stuff when he came here. I mean, fuck. Halford also did an industrial side project.
He did. He did two.
So when people were like, why are you not just doing metal or power metal, that lateral move thing that we were talking about?
Right.
Like, Halford didn't do it either. Remember? He was industrial for a moment. Yeah. So, and Fight was not like, you know, Fight was very like new metal, 90s metal type project.
Yeah. That wasn't exactly just Judas Priest under a different name. It was more.
He came out with like plaid shirts, like flannel shirts and like, you know, combat boots. It was a whole different.
It was of its time. Let's put it that way. Not in a bad way, but it was definitely
I love Fight,
the 90s, but much more so.
But right. artists gotta grow, man. You know, so when we started doing this thing, we just like, I'd always wanted to be an all-girl band, but Judas Priestess had taught me so much about like what it is to be close to like other girls and like what it is to be close to, because I'm always in bands with dudes, but I always like loved bands like L7. You know, or like loved bands like Babes in Toyland or, you know, shit like that. The Riot Grrrl movement, obviously,
right,
was like
Bikini
hugely
Kill
influential on me. Yeah. Was really a big influence on me growing up because it was the first time I saw like girls that were like fearless and like aggressive, you know, like, and it was like, you know, like Kathleen Hanna was like out there screaming, she likes fucking. And I was like, that's fucking great. Like, I was like, she's like a dude. Like, they're doing stuff like guys do, you know, like they're making statements as strong as like men make statements in rock and roll. So it was like, okay, like that's who I identify with too. I want to be able to make as strong statements as like the guys make, you know, so many female singers sing about like love, lost love, you know?
Yeah. So much of that is wrapped up in love songs or ballads or whatever,
and
whereas not
like,
nearly as much.
Right,
that's
but I
as
always,
aggressive as the male bands.
Right, and I always found myself in my worship of certain male idols. I didn't want to fuck them. I wanted to be them. You know, so I just was very much like, you know, like I want to, like the freedom that they have to say the things they're saying. Like, I want the same freedom.
That's exactly what Ann and Nancy Wilson said about them forming Heart. They didn't want to be the girlfriends of the Beatles. They wanted to be the Beatles.
Yeah. I don't want to be the groupie either. I want to be, you know, the artist, and I want to be able to say what I want to say without being ostracized or treated like, I can't say that because I'm female or any kind of bullshit. So Riot Grrrl movement was huge for me, because I was just like, it's the first time I had seen females that were like unapologetic, you know. Even Tina Turner had her limitations with the things that she would say in song,
right.
You know. It was a lot of lost love blues type shit, you know, where I was like, cool, but that's not how I feel.
That's not what I'm trying to say.
Right. That's not
great
what
as
I'm
it is,
here.
It's not
right.
What you're trying to say.
I just go like, nah. So when Judas Priestess like came around, it was an opportunity to take male words and like flip it in a very feminine way, like aggressively feminine way. And I think that's like the key to Judas Priestess, is that I call it ferociously feminine Judas Priestess, because it's like,
that's
so
perfect.
Yeah. It's like, it's very, it's completely estrogen fueled, you know. It's like, it's really fucking, but it's got such a primal intensity to it that's like not usually associated with female energy in music. So like, that's why Judas Priestess is successful, at least in the scope of trippy bands, you know. But it's always been our dream to write originals, and like that is coming down the pipe as well. There's a couple things on our bucket list that we are going to accomplish, like hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah, everybody's plans have kind of been put on the back burner until things get back to hopefully where we are now.
Yeah, I'm not worried about even getting back. I don't think it'll ever go back. There's too much like paranoia, and like I feel like people's emotional their emotional well-being is different now, and definitely priorities have shifted now. So I think there's going to be a lot more appreciation, but there's going to be a lot of like, it's just going to be a whole emotional thing trying to, it's not even fitting back into a former lifestyle because the lifestyle is going to be just forever changed.
Yeah.
People are doing a lot less now than they used to. And it's, I don't think that hamster wheel is going to come back.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think the stepping back into life is going to be a lot harder than it was to step out of it. Because now everybody's coming in with there's a certain amount of paranoia. There's a certain reluctance when it comes to other people and awareness of crowds and things like that, which we're already starting to see as people are making their way back out into public and capacity restrictions are being lifted. So it is going to be a weird. There's going to be this weird growth period, which is we don't know how long it's going to take, honestly, because we haven't had to do this. Yeah. Yeah. It really is going to be a gradual thing.
I know it's going to be a thing where eventually someone's going to be like, tell me about what it was like to live during pandemic times. You know, it's like, it's going to be such like a generational thing. Like
we're basically,
you know, we're Titanic survivors is basically what's going on. You know, it's like we're going through something extremely traumatic that's going to go down in history books forever.
Right.
And we're just trying to make sense of it all and figure out what's important going forward.
Right. And figuring out the way forward, period. Because like you said, everything's going to be different now. It's not going to be exactly the way it was. And if it does get there, it's going to take a really long time.
I've even seen like new models coming about for like how to do theater going forward and how to do certain kinds of performances going forward. Everyone's trying to come up with what's going to be the modus operandi going forward. You know, everyone wants to be the one who invents the go-to way to do XYZ. Like, it's so funny, that competition that's happening right now. But I don't really care who wins in that respect because, like, I know the art is not going to go extinct because everybody wants that to continue.
Totally.
You know, it's just, like, people are just trying to come up with a new delivery system to, like, deliver the medicine. Like, I don't know, it'd be interesting to see what survives and what doesn't. I mean, it's just going to be new trends that are going to be born. And it's going to be, you know, like, for example, like, people are talking about drive-in concerts. You know, people are talking about, you know, drive-in theaters. You know, not just, like, movie theaters, but, like, theaters.
Right.
You know, so it's like, the interesting thing is that now there's this room to play and experiment, which maybe before was not okay. Before it was like, nope, this is the way we're doing it. And this is released this way. And that's how it is, like X, Y, Z. And like, now it's like, okay, give me a little bit of A, give me a little bit of N, give me a little bit of Q. It's like, give me like whatever.
Yeah. It's a mixed bag of the ways we can figure out. There's going to be a lot of playing with different, formats as far as how we're going to get things done, how we're going to have experiences from here on out, because as much as people want to get back to it, people are also reluctant. It's going to take a little while to just get the comfort back.
It's all a big experiment, you know, and I'm down for experimentation. I think experimentation is like the sweet stuff. It's like where you get surprises and you discover things that you didn't imagine or you didn't allow yourself to imagine. Like, I feel like this could be a real renaissance time for the country.
Oh yeah.
And for the world. Like, it could definitely be, we could enter into this world where it's like our priorities will shift to things that make you feel good instead of things that make you feel like shit. You know, people are taking seriously like self-care and things like that for the first time. It's a real thing. Back in the day, if you said self-care, it meant you were weak.
Yeah. You couldn't handle life.
Yeah. You couldn't handle the shit on your own, so you have to have self-care. It's like...
Yeah, it was a joke. And now it's actually a thing where we were actually joking about that on the show a couple of weeks ago, that it's basically anything, any kind of behavior. If it's drinking a bottle of wine at the end of the day, it's like, it's self-care, as long as you put hashtag self-care. But there is a general awareness that, okay, it is important to find something that does give you comfort, as long as it's not completely unhealthy. Certainly nothing is dangerous to anybody else. But yeah, there's definitely an awareness as far as anxiety as far as mental health, as far as everything, which this experience has brought to light. I mean, this is a real turning point in human history as far as...
Because when in human history has it ever been okay to have anxiety?
Never. Previous generations didn't acknowledge it. There were different ways of addressing
it. You were taught to shove that shit down.
Yeah. Don't wear your emotions on your sleeve. Don't address if anybody else has a problem. It's like, you know, Uncle Dave loves to drink. No, he's an alcoholic. It's not that he loves to drink. He can't help himself.
Right.
He needs to go to work and fall asleep in the doorway of the building so that he doesn't not go there the following day. He has a problem.
Right.
We don't call it that. Right. We say he loves to
drink.
It's
not a problem. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with drinking. Everybody else has a problem with my drinking.
Yeah, but, exactly.
But yeah, now we're actually at a place where we can look at these things for what they are and how they actually affect people, because unfortunately it's taken something like this for everybody to understand that, oh no, there are different levels. There is a spectrum when it comes to anxiety or depression or just the way you deal with things around you. And even when it comes to even work, I was talking to a friend of mine who expects that he's going to be doing remote work for a while, and maybe he'll go back, but none of the offices for the company you work for, none of them in New Jersey are going to be coming back anytime soon, not even on a voluntary basis. So there's probably even going to be a hybrid as far as that goes when it's showing up for work. Yeah. And if you could do it remotely, you're doing it remotely.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like that the old system doesn't work anymore.
There had to be a disruption, I think, for everybody to kind of step back and realize, oh, okay. I mean, lest we wind up like Rome and we're just so happy with the way things are that we just don't even realize the damage it causes or at what cost we're maintaining our comforts.
If the pandemic had been over and done with in 3 to 6 months, we wouldn't feel like this.
Totally.
It wouldn't be like this.
But at the same time, I think there's going to be a point where everybody's going to forget and minimize it. And it's going to be so far behind it that everyone's going to deny the impact it had. That's the thing that actually does concern me. I feel like maybe in 6-7 years, people might minimize.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. But I feel like because it was a year and change, or going to be a year and change, because of the economic impact of it, that reality sinks in because it went on for so long. But like, if it was like I was saying, like 3, 6 months, even 9 months, it'd be different. It'd be like, oh, you couldn't bounce back being shut down for 6 months? Fuck out of here. You know, like, that's how it would be. But since it was a year, that's a whole different ballgame, because that's a whole tax season. It's like the fiscal calendar. It's everything. It's more than the fiscal calendar. It's like, it's just a long fucking chunk of time to be either shut down or doing things differently or paying extra for, you know, this and that for your business to survive. Like,
oh yeah. I don't think it's going to be minimized here on the East Coast, where things basically started, where it really, from not necessarily day one, but where restrictions just kicked in immediately. And there was that almost overnight impact. I feel like around here, there's always going to be that feeling of we will remember what it was like to live through this. I don't know. Maybe it's a lack of faith in the culture. Like I said, we're kind of a weird culture in a lot of ways, that at a point we might look at it as, you know, maybe it'll just be a meme and a joke, like, oh, 2020, you know, and it's just kind of going to be passed off as something that wasn't as serious as it was. But I mean, it's a turning point. We know that for sure, thankfully. In good ways.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm upset about the loss of life, you know, that has happened. But I'm hopeful that it'll lead to more meaningful work and more meaningful relationships with people, more meaningful practice, like more meaningful everything. Like, now everything is like, no, like, this is how valuable, you know, your time is. This is how valuable your family is. This is how valuable your home space is. You know, it's like all of these things are now causing people to reprioritize and look at themselves in a way that they haven't had time to look at themselves.
Yeah, we've all been on the hamster wheel. We haven't had a time to think about, well, how am I really feeling? Or am I really happy with my home? Or am I just working myself like crazy to pay for a home I get to spend no time in and don't even enjoy? I feel like, there's
and like
a lot of people
were burned out. A lot of people were burned out already. You know, they were burned out before the pandemic, and then like the pandemic happened And then it took them a little bit and they go, oh shit, I was so burned out. like they just like, they realized it, you know, during pandemic. So I don't know. To me, the pandemic is a big lesson in a multitude of ways. It's a big lesson. In a weird way, I'm appreciative for the experience. Yeah. I really am. I've definitely been changed because of it, for sure.
Yeah.
Like emotionally, mentally, you know, physically, of course. Like we all changed.
Yeah, we did. Like it or not, we all changed. No, but there are silver linings. You've been working on a ton of projects. You were able to work towards getting your degree. You were able to do scoring. All these things where if you were just on the road and working the way you had been, wouldn't have happened.
It wouldn't have happened.
But now it's helped you recalibrate. And same with me.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Day one of lockdown, I started doing this again because I said, I don't know. I kept flip-flopping about, well, maybe I'll start doing a podcast again. Maybe I'll bring the old show back. I don't know. And then literally day one of lockdown, I just said, well, I'm uncertain. I don't know what's going to go on. I know my brain's going to eat itself if I don't have something to work on. So I'm just going to start doing this twice a week and figure it out along the way. And now it's a thing. Now it's grown into something. So I can't be entirely upset and say it was all for nothing. And I've talked to a lot of people who just feel like this was all horrible. No good came out of it. But for me personally, there have been some good things. And I think everybody kind of needs to take some kind of perspective in that, because it can't just be all bad. It can't all be for nothing. There has to be something positive that comes out of this, because it's a year. Like you said, it's been a very heavy year that, I mean, if you weren't affected by it, lucky you, but you're the exception. But the rest of us, it's been a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely been a lot. I feel like nothing amazing comes easily. And I feel like this is really a turning point globally, where I think people are more willing to be aware of, like, self-awareness is now like a thing, and like awareness of other people and like their stories in this, like, you know, like all the things that are going on right now with, like, you know, like all these Asian hate crimes fucking push me over the edge. I hate this shit. But you know, I just it's gut-wrenching, A, because like my best friends growing up are Asian, and like some of my best friends now are Asian, and so like I really, you know, to me it's like it's a nerve to see that. But I'm hoping that people seeing that this stuff still happens in our quote unquote civilized world, that maybe some good will come out of that, or maybe like respect will come out of it, or maybe just like appreciation of their culture will come out of it. Like, I just hope for any fucking negative thing that a good thing comes out of it from here going forward. Just
definitely.
Because just life's too short, man. And like, I honestly don't live in the space where that exists. Like, I just don't think in these kind of terms. And I'm always like, when I see like hate related crimes or things like that, like, just like, to me, it's like, that's like an alien language. I don't even understand that kind of communication, you know?
Yeah, that's, I completely missed all of that. Right, thankfully.
Like being mixed race and then being from Colombia, which is like the diversity capital of the fucking planet. All of my bands, I've been in bands with like that were multiracial, that were trans, that were gay, that were whatever, you know? And I'm just like, I just exist in a sphere where all of those things, like being trans or being of certain lifestyles or whatever, is normal. So like this outside world where there's, you know, having issues with like trans just getting like the respect, like the people getting the respect they deserve or whatever, I just go like, I don't understand.
Yeah,
like,
why not?
It makes sense to
me. It seems obvious.
Like, yeah, like, and I just go like, man, like, we're still here. Like, we're still here trying to sort these things out. When really there's nothing to sort out other than just like, just don't be a shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
don't
just
be like, a dick to people. How about that? Let people live their lives.
There's nothing to sort out here. So basically from all of this is to say that like my new priorities are, other than just like, you know, I've always like wanted to like treat people the way they treat me and like be decent and be cool. But like also just like being cautious of like the energy that I put out into the world or to the people around me or to new people that I encounter. Just try to be, you know, as open, loving, accepting, like all those things. And also share that idea that it's okay to be open, loving, accepting. Like, you know, like that's all cool. Cause I know in the heavy metal community, there's definitely branches of it, of the family tree, where they're not down for that kind of, those kind of ideas.
Yeah. Definitely because a few, like, branches.
Yeah. Cause like, you know, a lot of heavy metal and alternative music is rooted in extremism. So, you know, with extreme ideas come extreme people, like become extreme actions and things like that. But I've always believed that people that are into metal and rock and roll, they seek it out because they're thinking people, and they require not just music like with a good beat and you can dance to it. Like they want something like lyrics that they actually think about, and like they research the bands they like, and they do the work to have more fulfilling music. Which hopefully that could eventually lead them to have more fulfilling relationships with other people who aren't like them. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
So that's probably why I do a lot of interviews, just because I want to offer a perspective that maybe is not heard that often in the metal and alternative communities, where, you know, people assume one kind of thing about people who listen to a certain kind of music, right? Or like, you know, like people would say to me like, oh, metal, that's for like white guys. Like, why are you listening to that white guy music or whatever? Like, I just laugh, you know, like, oh, rock and roll is just like, you know, that's for like this and that. And I just go like, I'm like, I could give the history lesson, right? But, you know,
you know,
like,
who invented, you know, it? No, word hasn't gotten around to wherever you are. Interesting.
But that's like, you know, it's whatever. But like I said, the reason why I like talking about these things in public spaces is because I just want, sometimes people have to like see it, you know, it's a representation thing. Sometimes people have to see it to understand it, or they have to see it to, maybe they never thought about certain things before. And maybe like this conversation can open someone's mind to like, oh, wow, that's like a different perspective. You know, as a mixed race, Black female, there's a whole spectrum of Black people. It's not just the two stereotypes you see on TV, you know? It's
yeah. Like, everyone's just a caricature. There are a lot of,
yeah. Like, I'm, you know,
just as much in as individuality as you have in your family or yeah, your friends right. circle or your social group.
Like the sassy friend has her own story, right? Right. It's like, or like, you know, the mystical darky, they have their own story too. But all of that to say, I just, you know, I guess I do give a lot of interviews, but the whole reason why I do it is just because I just want to change the narrative so people get a different perspective on how someone like me can end up in a heavy metal world like this, like how that all happened, and, you know, why it actually makes a lot of sense.
Right. You how know? You became exactly who you wanted to be, despite all of the attempted repression and trying to keep you in line and all those other things, trying to stunt your growth as the person right. you wanted to be. Despite all that, right. you're here and you're the artist you want to be, and you still get to right. be. Like you're still right. continuing to grow into.
Right, right. That's right. So right. thank you for giving me a platform and an opportunity to say my piece.
Of course. And because you explored so much depth, you get to be the next victim in Quarantine This or That. This or That questions, just like any you've ever heard. Coke or Pepsi. No wrong answer. Okay. Written specifically for you, just like every This or That game Woo! Has ever been played, except this one has the word quarantine in it because I'm also a creative powerhouse. Here we
Yay.
Go.
All right. Big money. No whammies, no whammies, no whammies, no whammies.
The Stone Pony or the Whiskey A Go Go?
Oh, fuck. Oh, God.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't say this was going to be fun.
I mean, the Stone Pony or the Whiskey A Go Go for what?
Just one or the other. You got to pick one.
Just one or the other?
This or that. Oh, I mean, you could give your reasons. This doesn't need to be like a quick rapid fire kind of answer.
Oh, fuck. That's so tough. I mean, they're two different, totally different. I mean, I guess I would have to pick... No, I don't. God. Let's see. Okay, so I have to pick the Stone Pony right now. I would pick the Stone Pony because I want them to survive this so bad. I feel like the whiskey will survive. I feel like the whiskey will be fine, but I do worry about the pony. And the last time we played there, it was like full house. They fucking came out for us, and I had never seen an audience that was so charged like that before. Like, it was fire. So they really showed up for us. So I'm going to show up for them and pick the Stone Pony. And also, like, I have great memories of that place. Lemmy and I shared a bottle of Jack Daniels at the Stone Pony once.
Really?
I was so fucked up. Oh my God.
I mean, I hope so after a bottle. Lemmy probably completely unaffected. He probably had a bottle before he sat down with you.
But. Completely unaffected. And like, he and I we just got into it, and we had the best conversation that night, and just, you know, he was giving me all of his advice and mystical rock and roll secrets. And
ooh, that could be a show in itself.
It really was.
The wisdom of Lemmy.
We just sat there at the back bar next to each other, and just, we killed a bottle together. And then they were like, okay, you like, don't have to go home, or you can't stay here. And I was like, okay, I'm good. And he's like, you sure you're good? I'm like, I'm good.
I'm good.
And
I'll be fine trying to show off in front of Lemmy.
I remember going to the parking lot. That's it. Yeah. No, I remember getting in the car, but I don't remember the ride home whatsoever.
See, like, if you don't have a story like that from the Whiskey A Go-Go, then obviously Stone Pony needs to win. Stone Pony takes this.
Well, I have plenty of stories like that from the Whiskey A Go-Go.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Well, too late.
But not like that. Not like that. But the reason why I picked the Stone Pony is because they really showed up for us last time. That was
cool.
Huge. That was the first show of Judas Priest. This was at the Stone Pony.
Ah, okay. So there is some.
Yeah. So it's very sentimentality. But, you know, the Whiskey, I do love the Whiskey. Played a lot of shows there.
I've probably been to more shows at the Whiskey myself.
So, have to say that when Judas Priest has played the Whiskey, they didn't show up so great for us.
Yeah, it's so LA. It's too much competition.
Naughty, naughty, naughty Whiskey. You know what it was? It was too short notice. We booked that gig like way, way, way late. That's what it was.
Okay.
But I'm still holding it against them.
They still lose in a game that means absolutely nothing, just to fill some time on a podcast. Whiskey A Go-Go still loses. Wednesday Adams or Lydia from Beetlejuice?
You got this off a meme because I saw this today.
Oh, really? No, I swear I didn't. You didn't.
Well, you know what? I would have said Wednesday Adams like most of my teenage life, but now, like older, I have to say Lydia because goddamn that red wedding dress. I love it. I always said if I ever got married, I would marry in red for sure.
Dave Holland or Scott Travis?
I mean, I have to go with Trav because the double bass is like, it's just, you can't beat it. We can't beat it. Get it?
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, sorry.
She's got puns.
Oh, God. I really don't. Yeah, Travis, man, he's just a beast back there. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Lemmy or God?
Lemmy, of course. But Lemmy is God, so that's like a trick question.
There you go. That was a trick question. I was setting you up for that one. That one actually had a correct answer, and you nailed it. Lemmy is God is correct. The Downward Spiral or The Fragile?
The Downward Spiral. Period.
No explanation necessary. If you have to ask, then you're
an idiot.
Yeah,
yeah.
Halloween Horror Nights or Not Scary Farm?
Knots. Yep. Not because I usually end my Halloween at Not Scary Farm. Like, that's usually like, that's like,
that's the finale for the Halloween season.
That's the grand finale. Yes, 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 for sure. Because of the scare zones where it's just literally like, they're just pumping smoke, like fog, into the park. And then like, people are just jumping out at you and like grabbing you. And like, there's like screams and the, like there's cobwebs hanging and like it smells like popcorn and autumn.
It's intense.
And it's just like, and I love that alone. like just that experience is enough for me. Like, the haunts are great, but just the being in the ambiance, like, it's just such a good vibe. So Knots, hands down. Yeah.
British Steel or Screaming for Vengeance?
I'm biased because British Steel was my first Priest album, so I have to pick that. British Steel. For sure. Columbia House.
This is true. No wonder. You are being poached by another tribute band. Which one do you choose? An Ozzy Sabbath tribute band or AC/DC?
In reality, neither. But, because I just feel like it's been done too much.
Right, but there are no stakes here.
Right. So even though I feel like I should be drinking. Even though I love Ozzy.
That's the next time.
And Sabbath. Yeah. I would have to pick AC/DC because I'm like a Bon Scott junkie. And like the music is like, it just talks right to my fucking core. Like I just love the like dirty, like most of the songs sound like Runaway Trains, you know? Like I love that feeling. Like it feels like it could fly out of control at any second, you know? Like I definitely get off on that energy. So AC/DC.
Who's the scarier villain, Freddy Krueger or the Nun, aka Valak from Conjuring 2?
Oh, I know.
I was doing that for the listeners' benefit.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah,
no,
they're here too.
I know you know. Oh, that's right. We're doing a show. We're not just extemporaneously talking about everything that crosses our minds.
Talking. Yeah. I have to say that a scarier villain would be Valak because. We don't know her yet, so like we don't even know all the things she's capable of.
That's a really good point.
But like women are ultimately scarier than men anyway, because like women characters will fucking do anything.
You're telling me. You know? Oh, I'm sorry, I said that out loud. My mistake.
You're right. But also like, and this sounds really weird, but I'll be 100% honest. When I was a kid growing up, I was sexually attracted to Freddy Krueger. So I think, you know, to me, like, he's a sex symbol in a way.
Okay. So you couldn't possibly be scared of that.
That's weird. Yeah. Because I'm just like, oh, like, let's do this.
Something about him.
Yeah. It was funny. Like, I'm friends with Tony Todd, you know, the kid.
Yeah, of course.
Like Candyman.
Candyman.
Yeah. So, like, it's so funny hanging out with him. People just, like, you see, like, the look of terror that comes across their face when they realize who it is. It's so funny. I'm like, I would love to elicit that response.
Goals.
So like he was doing a horror convention in New York, and like I had told him one night, I was like, oh, by the way, I used to get turned on by Freddy Krueger, and he was like that's not the first time I've heard that. And I was like, oh cool, like, so you get it. And then he fucking was at this horror convention, he's like, are you coming to the convention? I was like, I am working, like I can't. And he was like, oh well, this person wanted to say hi. And he passes the phone. He's like, is this Militia Fox? And I was like, fucking Robert Englund, motherfucker. And I was just like, oh my God. And he was like, I love you. He's like, ha ha ha. All the metal girls love me.
Like, he's not wrong.
So funny. Like, oh my God, Tony totally set me up. So like, yeah, Valak's scarier. Valak is definitely scarier.
If it all went away tomorrow, for whatever reason, would you rather go back to doing musical theater or backup singing?
Musical theater. I'm never going back.
I'm never going back to backup singing.
Never going back.
No, were you not listening to me earlier? All right. I had these questions written before we started. Sorry.
Yeah. No, musical theater, at least you can like develop your character. You have that.
There's diversity. At least you can play a different character. That's true. That's kind of seems like an easy answer. At least you can do something. And finally, this one has a little bit of an explanation at the beginning. You can snap your fingers and resurrect one deceased frontman for the purpose of bringing back their band. Who do you resurrect? Chris Cornell or Peter Steele?
Oh, God.
You said you like people who do their research, so I may have poured it all into this silly game, but clearly...
I'd have to bring back Peter, for sure. He wasn't ready to go, right?
Yeah.
So like,
that's a good point.
I would bring back Peter. Peter wasn't ready to go.
I can still see the pain on your face having to choose, though. So I know that's not an easy answer.
I know, because I love Chris. I love Chris, and I do think that he was fucked up and did this thing that he probably wouldn't have done if he was not fucked up. But he also is someone who wrote about suicide a lot, so I feel like anyone who writes about suicide that much probably is going to try it at some point.
Right. Yeah, Peter Steele laughed at death and everything about it. They mocked everything about all the taboos about death.
Yeah, so. And also, like, Peter was a friend. You know, like, Peter used to prank call me. Like, fucking 5 a.m.
Oh, man. I'm going to make so many notes for your second appearance, you have no idea. There's a lot to tell.
Okay.
We barely scratched the surface on all this stuff.
It's true. But also, like, all his band members are still around, and they deserve to have that reunion if that was ever humanly possible. You know, it's like, that would be amazing. You know? So, yeah, Peter, R.I.P. Thank you for that. That was like a fun little brain game.
Well, congratulations. You have completed quarantine, this or that. Difficult as it was, you made it through. So, congratulations.
Thank you. I feel good now.
Well, that wasn't the point. No, I'm just kidding. All right, listen, everyone. Militia's not here for fun and games. Okay, maybe a little. The reason she's here is because she wants you to go to militiavox.bandcamp.com and get some music.
Yeah, buy some music, or at least listen. How about that?
Yeah, you can stream on Bandcamp as well. You can play the artist's music. Yeah. So if you're one of those try before you buy people, then there you go. Listen to it. See what I'm talking about with the Villainous album and her many other singles.
Definitely the best way to experience my music and to consume the music is to lower the lights or darken your room and just put your headphones on and just like lay somewhere comfortable and just trip out to it. Preferably with your eyes closed and just like take in like the sonic layering and like the distance of sounds and just like, you know, use it to have a real full body experience.
So can you people honestly say you don't want to support this kind of sincerity? I'm going to put the link in the description of the show. So if you just click on the link, it'll take you right there. So think about that dedication. Do it for her. And if not for her, do it for me. Because, listen, I don't want to get a message in a couple of weeks with absolutely no uptick in purchases saying, thanks for nothing, lose my number. I don't need it. Okay? So if you're not going to do it for Militia, do it for me. And, of course, you can follow her on all the socials. At Militia is my name. And MilitiaVox.com has all the links for everything. And definitely follow her on Instagram because she makes a really compelling argument for why 1994 was the best album year ever. It's hard to argue. Even if you're not a fan of everybody, you know what? She does make a really, really strong argument. Follow her on everything. Buy the music. And hey, autograph photos too. Think about it. This woman is willing to brave a New York City post office in a pandemic, which isn't exactly, listen, in the best of times, that's no picnic. So she's willing to mail you out some autograph photos. I can't thank you enough for being here. This has been incredible. More to come. We clearly have a lot to talk about, so there's going to have to be
right? So, thank you so much for having me on, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Oh,
I appreciate you and you doing your research and like scratching the surface of who I am as an artist. You know, I appreciate that.
This is true.
Diving deeper than most. I mean, I definitely told you more than I tell other people that I speak to in interviews, you know.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and so sorry if I was rambling at times, but it was, you know, I was talking about some things that I hadn't really thought about for a while. And obviously, like, putting things together while we're going through it. So thank you for the therapy. And
no problem. If this can be a therapeutic experience, then good. It helps somebody other than just massaging my ego for saying, like, I do a show. Look at me. I do a podcast. Right. Because, you know, I'm a white guy in my 30s. Of course I do a podcast. But still, there's that little extra bit of ego massage that goes with, see that? It did some good. Maybe she'll sleep better tonight having done the show. And
that's
if you want
right.
more of this priceless therapy, you can also follow me on Twitter at Chris Abalo and on Instagram at Chris Sells Out and follow the show at Cape Pod on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe on the app of your choice and support the show on Patreon. And of course, as always, the show will be back next Monday. So make sure you subscribe, like, follow, and thank you for all of that. So until next time, for Militia Vox, this is Chris Abalo, and this was yet another experiment.
Being like that about another colour is the same as Hitler was about being Jewish and about other colours. You cannot be just one colour. If the bloody thing is ever going to work out properly, then we all have to intermarry and screw each other blind and get to be coffee-ish. But then we'd still find people that were lighter than those guys, right? You can't win with that one, but you can win by just doing it.